And welcome to Author's Note.
Don't like, don't listen.
My name is Cass.
And my name is Tease.
Welcome to the second episode of Summer Vacation. I just want to update you with some scheduling conflicts for the camp. You have probably at this point already listened to our wonderful Warrior Cats episode, which was done and edited by the wonderful, incredible Panda. Thank you so much, Panda. That episode is a real delight. So please go check that out. Originally, we were going to have four episodes this month, but time and tropical storms happened and we want to be on vacation. So the final week of this month, there's not going to be an episode. So you'll get one more after this and then we're going to take a nice little break. And you know what? You take a break too. Go check out some other podcasts. Tease and I are both real big fans of You're Wrong About. Mm-hmm. It's a phenomenal podcast. TC, got any other podcasts you would like to recommend people check out in that time?
Yeah, sure. I really like Rude Tales of Magic, which is an actual play podcast of a bunch of goofs playing Dungeons & Dragons 5e. And I think it's really funny. The cast has a really similar sense of humor to us, which I enjoy. And then I also like No Dogs in Space, which is a music history podcast, which is where I get all my tasty little info. What about you? Anything?
You know, I'm thinking about it. One of the things I really like to watch, you know, if I'm not listening to podcasts, because I think people get a good idea of what I'm into, but I really enjoy Jarvis Johnson on YouTube. Okay. He's great. Always be plugging. You know, Jarvis doesn't need clout from us, but Jarvis seems like a swell dude, and I really enjoy his content. So maybe go check him out. Tease, have you watched or read or engaged with anything sweet, tasty, and decadent this week?
Actually, yeah. So for the first time in 18 months, I went to a movie theater today. Oh, oh my God, it was so decadent.
How powerful was the orgasm?
Literally, I stuck my hands onto the crunchy faux curtain wall things of an AMC theater, and I let my fingertips glide on the walls of the hallway, feeling that curtain. I got so emotional.
Did you cry at all?
I didn't, surprisingly, but I do love the movies. So I saw Zola, which is based off of a 2015 Twitter thread. And
yeah,
it was delightful. It was short. And I mean, I had some experiences with it, like some opinions, but I don't want to spoil the movie for anybody. But it does stick very close to the original Twitter thread, which is fun. Obviously, does the dog die? Is your friend in the situation? There's a lot of talk about sex work and sexual assault and stuff like that in it. There's a lot of guns. So just be careful, you know, look stuff up, please.
Yeah.
And then I also watched The Vast of Night this past weekend as well, which is a movie that is very similar to the vibe of an episode of Twilight Zone. So I had a very fun time watching that as well. But what about you? Anything you got going on?
Yeah, I watched False Positive on Hulu because I got an ad for it. And I'm all about maternity horror. I think the concept is really underexplored and never explored enough by women, you know? It's like, oh, Rosemary's Baby. And it's like, first of all, fuck Roman Polanski. Second of all, fuck Roman Polanski. Third of all, fuck Roman Polanski. Fourth of all, Roman Polanski's a man. He don't need to be telling me a narrative about what it's like to be a woman who's pregnant. I know that man doesn't know that experience. But I watched False Positive, and I always forget her name, but it features the woman from Broad City, and like,
Alana or Abby? Watch it.
The one with the big hair. So I think Alana.
Yeah. I can't remember what her name is either, but I think her first name is actually Alana.
Yeah. So the movie has Pierce Brosnan and Justin Theroux. It's not good. It's not good. And like, they're all good actors, but they're like really overacting. So it's like, it must have been something with the director. And it has some really weird, gross undertones and self-contradictions. And it's like, it could have been really good, but it just, it was a little too much and a little not enough all at once.
Okay, I understand that. I know you talked about watching Phantom of the Paradise. Did you do that? Are you going to do that anytime soon?
I would like to watch it. I made that tweet last night. I got to bed at 7 in the morning.
I took
a nap.
Oh, trust me. I fell asleep last night at 10:30.
In the morning?
No, at night. I really like Phantom of the Paradise. It's it's Mr. Brian De Palma, so it's the same director as Carrie. And it's a retelling of Phantom of the Opera. But instead of it being like a theater house, it's a rock club in the 70s. And I think it's fun. I really like it. And I really like the music in it, too. So,
yeah, I'll check it out. And then I have a whole bunch of books that I have set aside that I'm really excited to read while I'm on vacation.
I'm so excited for you. I can't wait to hear all the delicious little things you tell me.
Without further ado, Tease, what are we talking about? What are you going to teach me about this week?
So,
this is a Tease episode.
It is. So
Tease talks more than me. That's why.
So when you talked to me about Quizilific, I said, okay, now it's my turn to teach Cass something. So we're going to be talking about the rise and fall of the print scene, which, to say that zine culture is huge and vast, so I'm just prefacing this at the beginning of the episode. We clearly are going to have to do episodes about other zines in particular. This is just about print zines within fandom spaces. I'm aware that somebody pitched us an episode specifically on Star Trek zines. I'm aware that there is a huge market of music and Riot Girl and punk music in particular zines, like Shadow. I mean, like, for, let's be real, Spin was originally a zine before it was ever a professional magazine. Girl Germs, Jigsaw, Sniffing Glue, / XYZ. You know, like, there's tons of music zines. I know a little bit about them because I'm into music history. So one day I will make you suffer and talk about this. But for right now, we're just going to talk about fandom zines.
That won't be suffering. I'll be very excited for that, though.
Thanks. And if you were a part of the scene, please, by all means, shoot us a message, reply to us in a tweet, send us an email, YouTube comment. We would love to hear about your experiences. I know that sometimes things that we think are properly documented might not always be properly documented. So if you have a zine experience to share, a news group or a mailing list story, I would love to hear about it.
Especially because so many people's experiences with these things are all so very different and personal.
Yes.
And because these are such small insular communities, people can have wildly different experiences and like whole different subcultures. Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, even you and me as two young people, relatively similarly aged, our experiences with zines probably vastly so differ. So we're gonna start off with the first print zines, which is kind of fun. So zines go all the way back to the 1930s, actually, and the first zine that was ever made was The Comet, and it was by the Science Correspondence Club in Chicago, Illinois, and it was a sci-fi zine. It was people sending in their sci-fi short stories, their short comics, their little analysis pieces, a lot of conversation. Zines in the beginning were kind of like a soundboard. Like, people would send commentary, people would write analysis, it would be art, it would be comics, fan fiction, over time kind of forms and stuff like that. So when we think of zines now, we tend to think of like fic and art, fan art, sometimes comics if it's like an original anthology. But a lot of zines in the beginning did a lot of commentary, analysis, just discussion between each other, because since the internet wasn't a thing, it was it was the only way to talk to other people about the things you want to talk about, you know. So there was a lot more community within the pages, if you will. So as zine interest grew, so did prestige within the community, and there's actually a Hugo Award that is presented for best fanzine every year, and it has been presented since 1955 every year. I did not know this, which is fascinating. Like, damn, imagine getting a Hugo for a zine that you made. Like, that's fantastic. So besides all of that fun stuff, our story technically begins in 1967 when Spockinalia was produced, and it was, as you can imagine, a Star Trek zine. So
it sounds like a dish that the Italians serve for dessert at Christmas time. And I feel like it would taste a little bit like baklava.
Yeah.
Tease, make me the spockanalia.
All right, I'll do my best for you, Cass. Don't worry. So as early as the second issue, staff and crew of Star Trek actually worked with the zine to give readers content, including interviews in character style letters, behind the scenes commentary of the original Star Trek series. So even by episode two, Gene Roddenberry would hand out copies of this zine to new writers on board and be like, this is a very big driving force of our community. Like there was
That's
a very
so cool.
There was such this huge, deep respect from the cast and crew towards the scene, which I think is really, really beautiful, you know, like,
yeah,
wow. So even when Star Trek ran the risk of being canceled after two seasons, fans obviously banded together to create a letter writing campaign to save the show. And though it wasn't just solely fans that purchased fanzines, a good chunk of the people who did in fact send the letters were coordinated via fanzines. So we owe a lot to fandom, even pre-internet. Like, there's still a deep power within culture of groups of these people. So that kind of sets the lighting for how important fanzines were at the time before the internet. So, like, it blows my mind every time I think about it, because literally I don't think, like, an Adventure Zone zine could, like, hold that much power today, you know? So,
but I mean, if you think about it, right, it's like you didn't have the internet in the way it is today. So, like, really the only way that actors and staff writers were able to know about the impact of their show was through efforts like this or meetings at conventions even.
Yes.
You know, it's not like today where it's like you can search a Twitter tag and see people going buck wild, you know? It's almost like this is an extra step of effort to really show your love and appreciation. And, like, we take it for granted today, I feel
And it was such a labor of love, because if you think about it, I mean, I'm going to talk literally right now about just the creation of these zines, and it's a lot harder than what it currently is now, amazingly. You know, so as we shifted into the 70s, zine creation actually got a lot easier because copy shops became a thing. The Xerox
mimeographs?
The Xerox machines obviously became more readily available, and it was way faster and way cheaper than using a mimeograph. And for people who aren't familiar with the mimeograph, mimeographs were made by pushing ink through a stencil to make multiple prints. So obviously there was a lot of wear and tear quickly because it was just a stencil. It wasn't like something solid and set, like it was made to throw out at the end of the day. So even that, you would have to constantly re-stencil things. You would have to constantly remake them. And at this time, zines were a fantastic way to meet like-minded people the same way that we do online. And it helped you, once again, share an interest that might be kind of a little bit weirder or fringe, because even though now we can casually be like, oh, like this guy I just met standing next to me in line at McDonald's who had a Love Live badge on his shirt or whatever, like there's, you kind of already get the sense that this person exists in the same bubble that you do. However, like, you're not going to obviously talk to the mom next to you being like, hey, what about that Kirk Spock? You know, like, it just was not as readily available as the same way that it is now online. So with
zine, it used to not be cool to watch anime. Like, we can acknowledge that everybody's like, no, you were just weird about it. It's like, no.
No.
It genuinely was not cool to watch anime, at least where I grew up and in my experience.
Me too, same. Yeah. So for the average person, it suddenly was like an opportunity for you to have a slice of fame in a way, because it was like office workers, housewives, retail workers could suddenly gain this fame, because if they kept analyzing how characters interacted with each other, or were really good at drawing two characters kissing, or really good at fan creation, it was, you would get continuously into these zines, and you would build a name for yourself the same way that a person does when they post fic, and people keep coming back to their fic, and people keep following you on social media because they like your fic or your fan art or whatever. It's the same idea. It kind of, I know we talk a lot about how there's a difference between being a digital artist that does only original content versus fan content online, because you have a built-in fan base. when these people who would print in these zines, they had a built-in fan base. And then it just further expanded because people knew that they could trust it by your name. So
exactly.
There's like a lot of how, so the way that print zines worked in the beginning really was a precursor for how we existed as a online community, which is like super fascinating. And at the time, zines were pretty much learned about via word of mouth and convention. There obviously was no internet to speak of. People would send envelopes to zine moderators with stamps and return addresses. They were sent back with the pricing lists, and that's how you would find out how much you're willing to pay for a zine, stuff like that. And then they would just ship a check in the mail. And then a month later, suddenly the thing that you waited for this whole time, a box would just show up at your doorstep. Like,
it's like when you were a little kid, and I don't know if your school did this, but there were like Scholastic catalogs that would come out every month, and the teacher would like hand them out, and you'd go through and you'd pick a bunch of books and you'd show it to your parents, and they'd be like, okay, we can get this one and we can get this one.
You circle
them, fill out the whole thing,
and then your mom would fill out the form for you.
And then like a few weeks later, your teacher would be like, guess what came today? And everyone's like, what?
Exactly. And it's just fandom though, which is kind of fun. And obviously like conventions were more instantaneous because you would just kind of walk up around in a dealer's hall and snag a book from a printer. So same way that you buy zines from an artist that you like at a convention in an artist alley, or you buy an art book from somebody who's a professional dealer or whatever.
Speaking of, in case you weren't aware of proper con etiquette, it is incredibly inappropriate to read an entire zine that is on display as an example and then put it back, or flip through an art book and then put it back. If you flip through the whole thing, you either need to leave me a tip or you need to buy the copy. This is why I started binding the back half of my zines, because I was like, no.
I love that.
No.
That's genius. That's really smart, actually.
You want to see my Garfields? You must pay for them.
So obviously at these conventions, there was trading, there was swapping, there was discussion amongst friends and strangers, similar how to there's today comic swap meets, or, you know, like zine festivals that do in fact exist still. So the community thrived on word of mouth, and it was kind of like an open secret. Like, people were pretty hush hush once again, because it was not cool. And we obviously didn't talk about it in public spaces besides being around other like-minded people who like the same things as you. So, which is why conventions and meetups were so important to fan bases in the beginning, pre-internet. So then as time went on, zines were obviously still being made, but with the help of the internet, they were a lot more accessible. And that kind of, unfortunately, is a double-edged sword. And that brings forward kind of the demise of print zines. So in a newer digital age, the same zines were continued to be made, like I was saying, but people were also making newsletters, and these newsletters were frequently kind of made on the sly because they were about slash fiction, and it was via emails and servers. And in the 80s and 90s, emails were obviously not as...
The covetous nature of the pornography.
Yes. So in the 80s and 90s, emails were not as readily available as they are now. Frequently, people signed up for these newsletters with their work or school emails because personal email addresses weren't a thing yet, you know? So usually servers were hosted for people who made these mailing lists, were hosted by school servers or people who had enough money to physically host them. And truth be told, I know little about servers because I'm a dumb little millennial. So I'm sorry, I'm not like going super into detail of how your internet servers work, but it was an expensive thing to host an internet server. Yeah. I know that much. And it still is pretty expensive if you do enough stuff. And I realized that I did not mention exactly what a mailing list was, but it was a curated list of people that put their name down for a list, and then a main email would get sent out, and then people could essentially reply all to the original email and then comment and talk about these things. So if you'd be like,
it's a forum, but in an email chain.
Essentially, literally, I describe it later as like a Discord server via an email. So
wow.
It's rough. Like, so groups like Virgil existed solely only to talk about Flash, specifically for Star Trek and The Professionals, if I believe correctly. And, like, could you even imagine risking talking about Kirk and Spock boning on your work email? Like, I would disintegrate even thinking about it. Like, I, truth be told, read the original ABO fic while at work when I was working that job, but I read it with my Wi-Fi turned off, so it was only on my phone LTE. I made sure it was when nobody else was in the office except me. All my work was done. Like, there was no way to track it unless you physically, like, went into my phone and looked at my phone search history. So, it's, like,
it's really wild. And I wonder, because we weren't alive, you know, we weren't kicking as little babies back then. We certainly weren't aware and having emails. So, like, I wonder if that same level of paranoia and fear about being watched by, you know, your employer exists now. I mean, now it's kind of like, well, of course somebody's tracking me on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, people know what I'm doing. My internet service provider knows the exact kind of porn I look up.
Oh, yeah.
Do I have it in me to care? I really don't have the energy to at this point, you know? There's nothing damning there. It's just like, oh,
No, right. I hear you. And I think there was a lot, especially with, mostly, I read a lot about Virgil because FanLore had a page about them. They were one of the better known mailing lists out there. Mm-hmm. And with Virgil, there's a lot of talk about being accepting and trusting the other people in the group. They only purposely put out one ad because there also used to be fan zine advertising book lists that you can get, where people would advertise, like, their news groups or their mailing lists or their zines or their new comic that they were making.
That's the Scholastic catalog.
It is. It quite literally was the Scholastic catalog of the internet at the time. So they were pretty tight, buttoned up about it. They would have meetups with each other, but they'd be super secretive about it. They actually had a convention, a very small one, together as a group type deal. So, like, they did retreats. They were adults, and they were only women, too, which was really fascinating because I don't talk about this because this doesn't really have to do with the rise and fall of zines. However, they were very into only women being into this mailing list. And obviously, like, how do you prove that? But it was strictly for women, and there is a fandom studies person around at this time who was like, hey, can I get on your mailing list? And people were like, I'm not comfortable with him being here because I don't want to be studied like an animal. I just want to talk to my friends about slash fiction, which I understand.
Fandom spaces were made. There is an episode to be talked about this later on because, like, this is a whole conversation. But fandom spaces were made and created and upkept by women and queer people, which is part of the reason why, like, men coming into those spaces for a long time, and I'm talking about cis heterosexual men, has felt really invasive and really uncomfortable for a lot of reasons. And, like, that still holds a lot of water. It's not necessarily valid anymore, but, you know, there's nuance in everything and discussion to be had there. And there is still a bit of, like, you know, a presumption that every fic you're reading is by either a queer person or a woman, you know? It's almost like, oh, a man wrote this fic? Wowsa.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So
we got a cis boy in the fandom here. A little sissy boy.
I mean, I think that's, like you're saying, there's definitely something to be said about how fandom interaction, just specifically cishet men versus non-cishet men.
Yeah.
Other people besides cishet men interact, especially with media. So, but not to go off topic for much longer, as the internet grew, so did obviously access to content as well as the content itself. And it's amazing to me because zines were this opportunity to show off both your writing and art. And at the time, it was easier to print writing. So zines had more of an emphasis on writing, which is why probably comment letters, essays, analysis were so much more readily picked up. However, art was still a hot commodity because we think about how slow the internet speed was in the beginning. There was no way these pictures would load, you know? So if you purchased a slash zine, that was probably your best bet to physically see characters kissing because you probably would not see that as quickly online because of how heavy duty it was. Plus, like, the loading time. You can just turn a page and see it. So I did mention this. Mailing lists worked how a newsletter kind of works today. However, mm-hmm. everybody can talk and reply all to people. So you kind of had to read people's interactions and comments unless you physically saw a name you didn't like and just did not read their replies and comments. It was a built-in community that existed within these groups that we don't usually get that much today. Yeah. So the closest thing would be like a Discord server, like mm-hmm. I was saying. It's, yeah, you're stuck in this group with people and you can't kick them out unless you're the head mod or unless they choose to leave. So stuff like that. There was kind of this
age old. The girls are fighting and you've got 80 emails.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like in some of the FAQs that I was reading for these mailing lists, they were like, hey, if you're going on vacation for a weekend, like you better unsubscribe to us and then come right back. Like just say, hey, I'm unsubscribing for the weekend. I'm going away on a family trip. And the head mod would be really okay with it because at that time, obviously, there was usually a limit to how many emails you could get. A lot of emails would get bounced back. It would flood the moderator's server email and stuff. So like there was a lot of self-awareness and self-cleaning. And yeah. it forced a lot of people to actually interact with people who might not necessarily have the same views as you when it comes mm-hmm. to a character, because you guys were in this bubble, essentially. And maybe we kind of need that so we could actually just not yell at people and just close our eyes and look away. But mm-hmm. that's just me. So while fandoms were getting bigger and bigger, they kind of felt smaller at the same time because there's so much forming. And yeah. meanwhile, we kind of also get the rise of news groups, which mm-hmm. is another access point to fan communities. These groups kind of existed similarly to how Reddit pages would today. You picked and choose who you interacted with, but people would just post everything at their leisure. So the same way that somebody on r/whatever posts a random thing, you can choose to upvote it or downvote it or comment on it. The same way kind of worked with these groups. So
interesting.
Eventually the main Star Trek group that existed on one list, and then one list eventually became e-groups, which then later was purchased by Yahoo and became Yahoo groups. The Star Trek group splintered into general Star Trek, then fan art and fan work Star Trek, then analysis Star Trek, / Star Trek, so on and so forth. So fans were becoming easier to ignore. And even mm-hmm. though it's not explicitly said, I think it suddenly became easier for you to kind of go off on your own and do your own things with your yeah. own community, part of a fandom with your friends. So suddenly you didn't have to take one super popular zine's fan and concept as gospel mm-hmm. anymore. You could yeah. choose other things, you know, and you could hunt out other people who felt the same way as you and make your own zines together. Mm-hmm. And there's also just at that time, it's the beginning of chat rooms. You can choose to talk to other people in chat rooms together, you know?
Yeah.
So suddenly fan,
you're able to curate your own experience yes, at long last,
yes,
you know?
Yes, exactly. That's it. So at this point, fans kind of decided that you could post their own fic and their own fan art online now for free instead of submitting to a zine. And some newer zines were also made as well, mm-hmm. but there wasn't as much submission vetting process or an editing process the same way there was for the original fandom zines, because now anybody could do it. And mm-hmm. it wasn't a certain standard set with the one zine. So a lot more typos began to happen. It would kind of be more of a crapshoot when you're buying a zine, just like yeah. how anything else, like if you know, like, oh, so-and-so made this, I know that it's going to be good. Like, the same mm-hmm. idea, you know? Zines were falling in and out of fashion, kind of, though, because of that. Because due to laziness, there was this urge also to share instantaneously and to kind of both appease the community of friends you've built up, but also yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, it yeah. feels so sexy when you post a fic and someone comments on it immediately. It's like, oh, this is tasty, whatever. But like,
when you get 3 kudos and you're like, damn, a banger.
Literally. So then with zines, obviously, there's no access unless somebody literally sends in a comment letter for the next issue to talk about your piece. Mm-hmm. There's no way to get that conversation going unless somebody yeah. pings you in on a news group or a mailing list and so on and so forth. So a lot of people started to shift more towards posting online for free because it was just mm-hmm. like, this is my hobby. This is something that I'm doing. Yeah. I wasn't going to get paid for it in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it kind of lowered the submission amount for physical printed zines because other people were finding kind of a new version of it elsewhere online.
Yeah.
So,
and
now,
they could curate it, you know, they're able to seek out exactly what they want instead of getting something where it's like they might only be interested in the work of one person in that zine and not anybody else's, which is sad because then it's a little bit more difficult to stumble upon new people.
Yeah. Now in the current realm of zines, the internet, zines are kind of like popping off again, which is really fun. You know, there's a lot of accounts on social media promoting applications, pre-orders, interest tracks, stuff like that. Digital zines in PDF form are being presented hand in hand with physical zines and anthologies. And there seems to be this kind of zine renaissance going on, I would say. I don't know if you agree or not, but I think a lot more zines are popping up than they have in recent years.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't see zines at an artist alley table in 2010 the way that you would now in 2020.
No, absolutely not. So, no.
And obviously, like, this part isn't researched. It just happens to be that I have a pair of eyes and so
it's anecdotal.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been in several zines. I've been rejected from several zines. Like, trust me, I'm aware of what
this
goes on.
This is a section where you're on the ground like a little possum. Yeah. Yeah. With your nose in the dirt, finding all those little bugs, picking
I've
them
modded,
up, getting
I've
rid of those
zines.
Parasites.
Yeah, scrumptious. So in the past, there's kind of been this concept that zines are a luxury, that only a select group of people can kind of make them or take part in them, which is like, that is to agree that like other fandom zines, but not just like regular DIY zines, because DIY zines are still DIY. You know, they're still made by hand. Mm. They're still printed on your printer, your stapler, whatever. But now, slowly, the internet kind of creates this bigger audience, and it's actually easier to find like-minded people interested in the same things as you. So sometimes you will get the My Hero Academia Furby zine or the hospital theme Fire Emblem zine, and I'm like, who is this for? But
incredibly niche zines.
Yeah. So, like, if this were to happen 20 years ago, I don't think that might be made, but clearly it's getting sold and being made because enough people are pitching to it or buying it, you know? So there's like, even if like kids don't necessarily have the money for it, you know, there's still a way to interact with a zine online the way that you might not be able to interact with it in the past. You can promote that. You can possibly reblog a giveaway. You can see the previews that people post and then know for a fact you want it, stuff like that. So there's a lot more accessibility to zines in that way, which unfortunately kind of like makes it more of a gray area, you know? And it's like, what's the point? No, that's not what I was gonna say. It's just like, okay, I guess you can do your Furby zine or whatever because there's people who
there's
follow.
So much accessibility. Yes. Well, even beyond that, there's so much accessibility to the resources to have this kind of stuff made.
Yes.
The availability for people to reach out to manufacturers, to printing houses, like that used to not exist.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, it was like if you wanted to make your own DIY zine, you needed to front the costs, right, for printing out those pages, for cutting them up, and then, you know, the long arm stapler or the perilous journey of using a traditional stapler, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now it's literally like, oh, yeah, we've got Mixamo. You know, we can just hit them up and get, like, a full color art book printed.
Yes.
And there are good things about that and bad things about that.
Yes. So I think another issue within the modern zine fandom space community is a lot of talk about if a zine should be for profit or for charity.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of conversation about if a copy of a zine is compensation enough. I know Cass and I have both talked a lot about this. We've also talked a lot about it with Jay, who's our fake third host. And we kind of just wish that like zines, I know for us personally, that zines would just kind of be upfront with what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely applied to zines before where it's like, when you send in your application, pick if you want this to be for profit or for charity. And like, that bugs me so much.
Yeah.
Because,
well,
like,
can I get a little shady here?
Yes, of course.
So I think the unfortunate reality of the situation is that a lot of times moderators will choose to make zines for charity, not necessarily because they want to be charitable, which I know sounds scathing, but like, it's just, you know, it's always going to sound worse than it is.
Mm-hmm.
But because they don't want to deal with payouts, they don't want to deal with getting people's PayPal information or, you know, Venmo, Cash App, etc. Doing the math to divide all of that up with profits. And like, I get that. I understand that. But it is very frustrating when you have giant teams of moderators, who are all working on a zine that, like, quantifiably, let's be honest, it's not a zine. It's an art book. It's an art collaboration. It is an art collection.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, if you are printing out a hardbound, foil-edged book with bookmarks, it has an entire merchandise line with it, and you're sitting there and you're going, I don't want to compensate anyone for the excessive amount of work they're putting forth for this that, like, I'm expecting them to do. I'm just going to put all the money towards charity. Like, I get it. It's easier. And yes, there are zines which are, you know, particularly aimed at charitable causes.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, what I have seen a lot of the time is moderators who get up to the point where they have planned everything and say, I don't want to deal with one more headache of planning and payouts. Let's make this for charity. That's really frustrating to me as somebody who has contributed to zines, who has been a part of zines. And it's like, listen, I know that the waters are very murky when it comes to payment for fan work. And that is part of the concern for people, I think, is that, you know, they don't want to get a DMCA. They don't want to get a takedown notice. They don't want to get sued. More than likely, you're not going to be. But there's an aspect to it where, like, you're having an open call and you're asking and curating your talent pool to, like, very busy individuals and saying, but you're just going to contribute out of love and this is for exposure. And it's like, no, that's not how that works. And you know that's how that works. Because more often than not, zine moderators are fellow artists.
Mm-hmm. And this has actually always kind of been a discussion that's on the table, which is really fascinating. Because what is fair compensation? You know, in the beginning, a lot of fanzines, if you were featured in that zine, they would actually send you 10 additional copies, which allowed you to keep for yourself, sell whatever price you saw fit, usually the list price. And you decided if you actually wanted to make your own money from it, or if you wanted just to give it to family and friends because you're proud of your work. And truthfully, if you had a zine that was sold usually at $15 and you had 10 copies, that means that you would make $150 essentially.
Yeah.
Like, that is a sweet deal. And that is more than I've ever gotten from a zine payout before.
There are zines that will make you as a contributor pay to have a copy sent to you. They're like, well, everybody gets a free PDF, and it drives me nuts. I find that kind of insulting.
Agreed.
they won't even give contributors the option to buy them at production cost. They're like, no, you need to pay full price, which is, you know, again, a little insulting and I think undervaluing.
Yeah. And I mean, like you were saying, I'm kind of mean and like, I want compensation for my work. Like, sorry to all the whales out there, but if I wrote Farmer Bakugo fic, I want my Farmer Bakugo money. Like, I'm sorry. I mean, I have written for charity zines. I have written for free zines.
Yeah.
I've done it. But, like, if there's money being slung and if it's a popular thing, I want my money.
Like, let's also be honest about it, though, because it's like, this isn't a problem with zines. This is a problem with the internet and capitalism and conglomeration as a whole, wherein creation has been commodified and simplified to a concept of content. And so there is so much I freely provide for people that if, you know, like, I do that out of the, I don't want to say kindness of my own heart, but the desire to engage and connect with people. And if I'm contributing to a zine, it would be nice, you know, in addition to seeing my work printed, to also get some kickback for that, because we also have to acknowledge that part of what sells zine is the contributor lineup.
Yes. Yeah. Big time.
The content within the zine is what's selling the zine.
Yes.
I don't look at all those contributor previews and go, I don't know about the quality of this art here. I don't know that this is something I want on my shelf.
I even do that with, like, the head moderators, truth be told. If a zine is being announced and the banners and promotional graphics that you show has art that might not be necessarily something that I like, I'm going to be less willing to draw it. I purchase it. And even if you're banner for a zine has official art on it and not your own personal fan art, I'm a little skeptical about your zine, truth be told, because it's like, what, you're not going to show what you as the head mod are doing for this? Like, it feels a little, I don't want to say shady, but I feel like
Feels like an obfuscation.
Yeah. And I mean, there's kind of, unfortunately, now this weird gatekeeping I've noticed within zines.
Yeah.
Where there's obviously, like, may the best get in 100%. But I also feel like there's this beef right now that writers are not wanted for zines anymore because it's hard to, like, edit them and it's hard to print writing, which is not true at all. Like,
it blows. It's moderators not having the connections or the willingness to connect with other writers who feel comfortable and competent enough to sit down and read through these works. And a lot of times, like, oh, you have 1,000 character limit, but we want a fully fleshed out plot driven fic. I'm sorry. Do you understand what you're asking for? Because that's not possible. Writers kind of do consistently get treated like the lowest rung of the sort of zine pipeline in every discussion.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, the way zines are run on Discord servers, writers are purposefully isolated from the rest of the artists and not encouraged to interact, which is also very frustrating. Yeah. That's not very communal.
And, and I get it. Nobody wants to actually edit fix for a zine, which is like a whole other can of worms. I've been a zine moderator for fic writing before. I've been a anthology editor before for a very small D&D anthology. And whenever I get to edit, I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I actually can edit. At least I could talk to people about these things. And then they're like, no, I don't want you to, like, talk to me about this. I'm like, what? Like, it's an editing process. We're supposed to make this better. Like, the same way that you give out whips on your Discord server to show your art and people say, like, oh, I like this. We should also be doing that with our writing. And there's just you're right. Like, writing in zines is so isolated right now. And it also sucks that, like, only fics are allowed. Like, I want some juicy analysis essay. I want some, like, I really relate to this character essay. Like, I love reading legitimate, thought out essays that are made with love the same way that people write fic. I think it's so underutilized within zine spaces. And usually now, when you do have people like that, it's strictly referred to as an anthology, and it's usually only for non-fandom related zines. You know, I want more. Like, I think
I think unironically, people are afraid of the discourse.
Yeah.
And I think, about potential cancellation or what have you because of opinions voiced, which is deeply unfortunate and also deeply troubling.
And it's just like, I think zines are now a artist's game than they are a writer's game, as they used to be. So even though, like, they've kind of been at its peak and then fell and now it's kind of rising again, it's different iterations, and maybe as time goes on, writers will be more accepted. But, like, how long have I been online? I don't even know. But in the zine space, I think I've maybe seen 2 writers only writer centric zines before. In the modern
era. Spoiler, they don't get a lot of attention.
They don't. Because,
again, writing takes the commitment to sit down and actually engage with it, whereas artwork, you can look at it for 5 seconds and kind of be done with it, which is why so many people just chew through fan. It is a whole schism of complication that, like, ranges far outside of zines.
And not to mention, once again, the kind of feeling that, oh, well, I can just read zines online. I could just read fics online exists. Yeah. And, like, truth be told, whenever I write fics for a zine, I don't put it up online.
There are people who are kind of chomping at the bit to immediately post them as soon as they can. But I think there's something that's kind of nice about that exclusivity, you know, at least for a time being. I understand for archival purposes, it can make a lot of people nervous that it's not safe and kept anywhere. But, you know.
So, I mean, there's also the debate that what's being published currently aren't actually zines, but they should be considered anthologies or art books, like you were saying.
Yeah, and they're not zines. They're very unzine-like.
Yeah, and at this point, though, like, the terms kind of just feel synonymous. literally divided in between like, oh, this is fandom related. Oh, this isn't fandom related. Like if it's fandom related, it's a zine. And if it's not fandom related, then it's an anthology in our art book, which is like not
which
good.
Is funny because I view it the opposite way. I mean, for me, zines are very much an experience of I walk into, you know, the first floor of a gallery building or a studio building. And, you know, there are just piles and piles of zines from the artists that have worked there. And a lot of times, surprise, surprise, they're either hand printed or they're crudely cut. Mm-hmm. They're slapdash. They are.
I mean,
to me is the essence of a zine.
That's fair. And I mean, specifically within fandom spaces and online, I guess, is what I'm saying now at this point. But definitely zines will never truly go away. They clearly still exist in the DIY scene. There's been a huge, big revival of the DIY print scene as well. They exist in the little booklets that you and your friends make for each other or sell as like a thank you tip zine at your con tables. They exist in lovingly crafted PDFs that people make online, and they obviously of course exist in the physical books that you get in the mail that people made because they love. So that's my brief little feelings about the rise and fall of zines.
If you have, you know, your own experiences with zines, your own fun little adventures to tell us about, we would love to hear them. I will just remind people, we read all our YouTube comments. We just don't reply to them. We don't, unfortunately, want to set a precedent and, you know, run ourselves ragged trying to reply to everything. We just don't have the time for that as to working adults with full lives outside of this podcast. But we do read everything that people send to us, even if we don't get back to you. And we love hearing from you guys. Like, if you have experiences with zines, if you have zines that you've really loved, zines you've been a part of without naming anybody or dragging anybody, if you have shady little stories about zines that you would like to share, we would love to hear them because that's a part of our collective history as fans and in fandom. And I think that's so important to share and learn and grow together. So thank you so much for joining us. We'll catch you next week for the final episode of our summer vacation. And then we'll take a week off and we'll get back to you then. If you want to find out any information about the podcast, you can find that on authorsnotepod.com. You can follow us across social media at authorsnotepod. And if you're interested in monetarily supporting us, though listening to the show is the best way you can support us, you can find us on Patreon and Ko-fi, that's K-O-F-I. We're authorsnotepod on both of those platforms. But, you know, times are always tough and money's a little stringent. And if you'd rather throw your bucks toward, you know, a cool zine that you saw, fully endorse that. Maybe just leave us a review on iTunes and that would mean so, so much to us. My name is Cass, and if you want to find me across the internet, I'm pretty much everywhere at Valhethella, that's V-A-L-H-E-T-H-E-L-L-A. Tease, if people want to find more of you, where can they get you at?
You can find me on Twitter as Vicuña, that's V-I-C-U-N-A-D. You can also listen to the Fresh Podcast Market, which I host with good friend of the show, Panda, and you could hear Panda on our Warrior Cats episode, as well as the Bubbleine Destiel episode from a while back. And Fresh Podcast Market is a real podcast about fake podcasts, where Panda and I make up really bad ideas for really dumb podcasts. Our theme music was done by James Wyulo, and you could find him at bandcamp.com/James Y. Cass, who did our cover art?
Our cover art was done by the wonderful, incredible Nyalius. You can find more of her work and all of her Final Fantasy XIV shitposting over on Twitter at Nyalius. It's N-Y-A-L-L-I-E-S-T. And sometimes she even posts pictures of her really cute cats featuring Junie, who's her favorite cat. Until next time, stay safe, wear bug repellent if you go outside, limit your exposure to the sun, wear long sleeves, make sure not to get a sunburn, always wear sunscreen, even on cloudy days, and stay safe and have fun. Bye!
Bye! I currently have farmer's tan from my sneaker.